Good morning, everybody. It's your buddy Neogentrix again. This is Food for Thought, Thoughts If It Were You. Today, we're going to go ahead and wrap up contraception. Hopefully, I can get it all into one episode, and I won't have anything left over unspoke of. But we're going to pick up with the last couple of methods. The next four that I'm going to talk about, I'm going to go through them rather quickly, are lifestyle changes. That's the only thing that makes these work, is if you change your lifestyle to match them so that it actually makes them effective. The first thing on the list, and I'm going to keep this as quick and short as possible as I can, is the all-inclusive pull-out method, the one that everyone is so familiar with. It has a 78% chance of being effective. It doesn't cost anything, but it does require dedication and skill to completely master it. For those who are attempting to master it. Pulling out also means withdrawal. It's a way to prevent pregnancy by keeping semen away from the vaginal area of a female to prevent pregnancy. And this method doesn't use a condom, but it's much like the same effective one. Basically means pulling out. The pulling out method basically means pulling out at the point right before ejaculation. So the girl doesn't get pregnant. It's pretty much as simple as that. It doesn't protect against STDs, as pre-cum can carry small STDs or any kind of bacteria, such as genital warts, herpes, chlamydia, syphilis, and gonorrhea, can be carried in your pre-cum and can still cause either party to get sick. If you still wish to use this method, it's best to use it with the ring, the pill, or the condom, like I mentioned before, or the emergency morning after pill, just in case. That's pretty much all there is to it. As for its effectiveness, if done correctly, pulling out is a pretty effective way to prevent pregnancy. It's hard to do it right every single time, but it is effective for most of the time. But again, like I said before, it does not prevent STDs, so you're probably better off still just using a condom. Every 4 out of 100 people will get pregnant if done perfectly. If not, you're looking at about 22 out of 100, which is every 1 in 5. So just keep that in mind, okay? As far as its disadvantages are concerned, well, for one, it's hard to pull out in time, and sometimes you get caught up in the moment and forget. Some people can't even use the withdrawal method or pull out method successfully in time. Some people come prematurely and don't even realize it, and end up, you know, getting her pregnant without realizing that they did, even though they thought they had pulled out. It takes a lot of self-control and trust between both parties to make this work effectively. And that's pretty much all there is to that method. It's probably the simplest one out of, well, all of them. The next one I'm going to talk about after our break, it's going to take a short break, is the abstinence and intercourse method. Back. So, keeping with the theme here, next is the abstinence or outer course method. Definition of abstinence is you just straight up don't have sex. Outer course is any other sexual activity besides vaginal sex or intercourse, if you will. Either one of these can mean different things depending on the people. It's 100% effective, costs nothing, but again, it's a lifestyle change and it does require dedication on your part. It takes willpower to make either one of these effective. Abstinence can mean different things depending on who you are. Many people say it's doing any other kind of sexual thing other than oral or vaginal sex. When in reality, abstinence is basically, by definition, just not doing anything at all. Outer course, on the other hand, means you do anything else, just not that. People sometimes use abstinence to prevent pregnancies on days they're fertile, like your period as such, to keep you from, you know, getting, I forgot what I was about to say, from keep you from getting pregnant. There we go. Outer course, on the other hand, means doing anything that keeps the sperm away from the egg. So there's no vaginal sex whatsoever at all, but you can still do oral or anal sex, or even in some cases, masturbation or dry humping for those who are into that type of thing. Talk about your fantasies, kissing, massaging, so on and so forth. That's basically all that is. It's 100% effective simply because it's, you know, it's a lifestyle change and it doesn't require any insertion of any kind. It's rare that anything does happen by accident. Sperm can swim up into the vagina and the fertile area, allowing cum to basically get to the vulva accidentally. So, bottom line, don't try to do anything stupid while you're swimming or taking a bath, if you guys take a bath together for whatever reason, because you can still get her pregnant even after you spend all that time trying not to without doing anything at all. And this includes oral and anal sex, as, you know, well, there's no dam between her egg and you, okay? And much to most people's degree, talking about sex or the decision not to have it is important, and it doesn't have to feel awkward, it just depends on how you choose to talk about it. Know what being abstinent means to you, first off, and think about how far you feel comfortable going with and what your sexual limits are before going into it, and make sure you talk about it with your partner, especially. Talk about things before you try to get touchy-feely, if you will, and be straightforward, and if you can't do that, at least be confident, okay? Talking, listening, sharing, being honest with each other, respecting each other's thoughts and feelings, and hanging out with each other, getting to know your partner well, can help this work more effectively between the two. And make sure you put it on paper. That way it's at least easy to understand. What's on the paper, it may be easier for some people to write it than to just do it. Okay? There's many different benefits and disadvantages as well. As far as a lot of benefits there are, you get to wait until you're ready to actually do it, wait till you find the right partner, you know, focus on school, jobs, get over a breakup, the death of a partner and or family member, or get over a sickness, infection, or medical issue. That, of course, can do the same thing as well. Not to mention it also prevents STDs, and you won't really need any birth control at all. There are some disadvantages, though. While abstinence and outer course are super effective ways to prevent pregnancy and STDs, avoiding sex can be hard for some people. If you plan to be abstinent but end up having sex anyway, pregnancy can happen even if you don't use birth control. So, people will still have some kind of sexual contact with some kind of other person at some point in their life, or they may end up being around a lot of people who pressure them to do it, which makes this kind of hard to do. But if you surround yourself with people who help you and support you, it makes this be more advantageous and it works out very, very well. It's a simple thing to cover. It's not a whole lot of information on it, to be honest, because it's pretty much straightforward as to what it is. The next thing on my list is the fertility awareness method, okay? It's a way of tracking your ovulation so you can prevent pregnancy. FAMs are also called natural family planning or the rhythm method for those who are interested. It has a 76 to 88% effectiveness rate, and the supplies that you can use for this can go up to $20 in cost. What it basically means is no sex on certain days. And it does require a lifestyle change, as it does require dedication on your part and your partner's part, depending on who your partner may be. Having a fertility awareness means that you track your menstrual cycle so you know when your ovaries release an egg every month. And this is what you call ovulation, which is what I've mentioned before. On these days, you know it's unsafe to even have sex, and if you still choose to, your best bet is to use a condom. There are a few different FAMs that help you track your fertility signs. You can use one or more. It doesn't really matter which one you use. One is the temperature method. You take your temperature in the morning every day before you get out of bed. The other one is the cervical mucus method, where you check your cervical mucus membrane, the vaginal discharge, every single day. The other one is the calendar method. You chart your menstrual cycles on a calendar. It's most effective to combine all three of these methods together. That's something called the... symptothermal method. There we go. The standard days method is a variation of the calendar method. You track your menstrual cycles for several months to figure out if your cycle has always been on the 26th, has always been between 26 and 32 days long. You can't use this method if you're longer or shorter. Once you've established that your cycle is in the right range, you use another form of birth control or just don't have vaginal sex at all on days 8 through 19, which is when you're basically fertile. And like I mentioned before, it is pretty effective, but that means 12 to 24 out of 100 couples who use this method will still end up pregnant whether or not they want to, okay? FAMs are most effective when you work with a nurse, doctor, or counselor who knows the FAM methods well to help you know how to use them correctly. You have the time and discipline to check your fertile signs and chart your cycles every day. And you and your partner don't mind avoiding sex, or at least intercourse, using any other kind of birth control method while you're on your fertile days. Because if you really aren't up for a lifestyle change and you plan to have kids, then, you know, like I said before, avoid all of this. It doesn't really matter. You still need to be safe, though. Okay? Let's see here. As far as knowing whether or not this method works for you, it's better to talk to your doctor and or nurse to see which methods work better for you. If you want to use the temperature method, go ahead and go into that real quick. Your body's temperature naturally changes a tiny bit throughout your menstrual cycle. It's lower in the first part of your cycle and then rises when you ovulate. For most people, that's between 96 to 98 degrees Fahrenheit. That's your typical temperature before ovulation, and it goes up during the period between 97 and 99 degrees. So it's not uncommon to be nearly 100 degrees when you get to that point. It's a good way to keep in track of whether or not you're safe to do anything or not. As with the cervical mucus method, it helps you predict when you're going to ovulate by tracking the changes in your cervical mucus membrane throughout your menstrual cycle. Okay, the hormones that control your menstrual cycle also make your cervix produce mucus. It's the gooey stuff on your cervix that comes out of your... Well, let me rephrase that. It's just your vaginal discharge, if you know what that means. Okay? Don't know, go ask your nurse. Your mucus membrane changes in color and texture during your menstrual cycles, which basically tells you when you're fertile and unsafe to have sex completely. Okay? And then with the calendar method, I'm just keeping this as simple as I can and hitting the key points here. The calendar method helps you predict your fertile days by tracking the length of your menstrual cycle over several months. Like I said before, most of those periods are about 6 months You can track up to at least 6 cycles using this method. After that, you have a set pattern. Okay? Make sure to mark the first day of your period as day 1. Okay, and then count the number of total days between each cycle, the number of days between the first day of first days of each period. You must chart at least 6 cycles but charting a few more months is even better because now you can keep track of it, okay? That way you know how often your cycles are and when it's safe for you to have sex so you can avoid getting pregnant. Okay? The last but not least method for a lifestyle type change, it's what they call, the breastfeeding as birth control method, okay? It has a 98% effectiveness, it costs $0, it does require a dedication on your part. It works up to 6 months after giving birth. This only works for people who have actually given birth, okay? Breastfeeding moms have many safe and effective birth control methods to choose from. And yes, if you're breastfeeding, you can safely use hormonal methods as well. They won't hurt you or your baby. You can start using the shot, the implants, Skyla, Marina IUDs, some types of birth control pills called mini pills right after giving birth. You may be able to even use the implant or IUDs in the hospitals or at your postpartum checkups. Okay? Especially the implants and IUDs, they're very, very effective. One thing I want to definitely point out is, like, anything, if you take the pills, remember to take the pill to be protected from pregnancy. There's a set it and forget it birth control, which comes really handy for new moms. It's a type of birth control app that can help you, okay? For the first 3 weeks after giving birth, though, don't use any method that has the hormone estrogen. Like the pill, the patch, or the ring. After 3 weeks, you can go back to using these methods just fine. Okay? It's just a precautionary thing. I'm pretty sure there's another reason to it, but you would have to speak to your doctor to know whether or not you can or can't do it. You can safely use non-hormonal birth control while breastfeeding. For up to 6 months after your baby is born, you can rely on breastfeeding as birth control if you have not gotten your period yet and are not feeding your baby formula or food. So it works out in your favor. The copper IUD is one of the most effective birth controls out there as it lasts up to 12 years, but you can get it removed. And it's pretty convenient for those who have just given birth as well. Okay? That's pretty much it with this method. As for its disadvantages, while it can be great, be a great natural birth control method, it also has drawbacks. It doesn't last very long. And you must breastfeed around the clock for it to work, okay? For breastfeeding to work as natural birth control, you have to breastfeed exclusively. That means nursing every 4 hours during the day and every 6 hours throughout the night, which can be pretty difficult. It means not feeding your baby formula or anything other than just breast milk. Even though breastfeeding is free, using it as birth control has other costs. Like time and energy. That's not something that everyone can afford. And being available every 4 hours to nurse can be pretty dang tough. You also need a strong nursing relationship, meaning your baby is really good at, well, suckling, to use breastfeeding as a birth control method. Some studies have even shown that weak suckling can make this whole method less effective. Using a breast pump won't work for lamb either. You're only protected against pregnancy if your baby is nursing, okay? And many people just have a hard time with doing that, okay? And on that note, breastfeeding only prevents pregnancy up to 6 months, okay? One of the side effects of doing this, your vaginal area has lower lubrication. So it means that you just don't get as wet as you used to when you're aroused, which can make sex completely uncomfortable. It also makes your breasts less sexual, so you're not going to feel a whole lot of anything as a result of that. So keep this in mind. There's only two methods left, and these are permanent changes, not lifestyle, not temporary, they're permanent. One of them, before I go any further, just a note here. I don't like these two methods, okay? I would rather a person get pregnant or not based off of their own actions. These are last resorts, okay? Because once they're done, they can't exactly be undone. The doctor can say that they can be undone, but then the thing is, what risks are you willing to take to have it undone, okay? First things first, sterilization. This is the first one. It's basically a tubal ligation. How do I put this in layman's terms? You want to make sure that you're sure pregnancy is not in your future. Tubal ligation, sometimes called sterilization or female sterilization, basically means getting your tubes tied. It is safe, effective, it has to be done surgically, and it's permanent. Has a 99% effectiveness rate and can cost up to $6,000. But it can also be zero depending on your insurance. It's a surgical procedure. You do it once and that's it. I kid you not. It permanently closes and blocks the fallopian tubes. Every month an egg leaves one of your ovaries called ovulation. The egg moves through one of your fallopian tubes for a few days waiting for sperm to come and fertilize it. Pregnancy happens if the sperm can meet up with the egg. Well, when the fallopian tubes are blocked after a tubal ligation, sperm can't get to the egg and cause pregnancy. The tubal ligation is sometimes known as sterilization. And, you know, there's a few different types of sterilization procedures as well. You can still get your period after tubal ligation. You'll still get it. And you just won't get pregnant at all. The question here is it right for you? And, you know, most people who have ovaries and fallopian tubes can safely get sterilized. Doctors will talk to you about your health to make sure that's even the right method for you. It may not be a good choice if there's any chance you'll get pregnant in the future. How do I put this? You're being pressured by your partner, friends, or family, so I'm not... If you're being pressured to do it, don't do it. You hope sterilization will solve problems that may be temporary, like marriage or sexual issues, short-term mental or physical illnesses, or even money problems. Don't do this. And then on the other note, it doesn't protect you against STDs. Okay, all it does is stop you from getting pregnant. Okay? Some types of tubal ligation use an incision, a cut in your skin, but Ensure doesn't. Keep that in mind. It's called Esure. You'll get medicine to help with pain, and you can usually go home on the same day it's done. You just won't be able to do anything immediately because you might be slightly sore. Okay? There are different types of that. I'm not going to go into much detail for it. Esure has advantages over different types of sterilizations in certain ways. This one is specifically, it is safer than procedures that use an incision or a small cut. So keep that in mind if you don't want to be cut. The recovery time is shorter than most others. Many people can get back to their normal lives without having to worry about it. And you don't need anesthesia for this one. There's no incision, so there's no visible scars or anything that you'll see. How do you feel after the sterilization, though? First things first, they may last a few days, but they usually don't stick around. You may feel tired. Your belly might hurt a little bit. Sometimes you'll feel dizzy, nauseous, a little bit of cramps, or belly pain. You may have vaginal discharge, like a light menstrual period. But if you have anything that lasts any longer, like any of these symptoms, definitely call your doctor immediately. If you bleed a lot from where the incision was done, the cut for your procedure, if you get a rash or a fever, have difficult breathing, have severe continuous pains in the belly area, have unusual discharge or odor from your vaginal area, you need to call your doctor immediately, okay? Because there's definitely a problem. As far as I can say, when it comes to having sex after the sterilization method, you generally wait 1 to 2 weeks to have sex after sterilization. Rarely people may have any pain during sex after the first year of getting the whole treatment done. But the whole reason for waiting 1 to 2 weeks is so that your body can adjust completely, and you don't have any issues, okay? Like I mentioned before, it can cost up to $6,000 to get this done. And while it is possible to get it free, it's just a matter of the insurance type that you have. As for the disadvantages, well, sterilization is permanent. It can't be undone. And if you want to reverse it, it's going to cost more than $6,000. Let's just put it that way. It does have some risk, like I mentioned before, and it doesn't protect you against STDs. So keep that in mind. And that's it for that. All that's left now is vasectomy. So stick around for that. Well, everybody, here we are at the final topic. If you're really dead set on not having kids, or you plan to never, ever produce a child, here's the last method. Vasectomy, also known as male sterilization. Now you know the reason why I don't like it. It is a means to protect against pregnancy permanently, and it's super effective. Vasectomy is a simple surgical surgery done by a doctor in an office, hospital, clinic, what have you. The small tubes basically in your scrotum, for us guys, that carry sperm are cut and blocked off. So sperm can't leave our body and cause pregnancy. The procedure is very quick and you can go home same day. It's extremely effective and at preventing pregnancy. It's almost 100% effective. It can cost up to $1,000 or nothing at all depending on your insurance. It is surgical and once it's done, it's permanent. There are two types of vasectomies: incision method and no scalpel, no cut method. The no cut method lowers the risk of infection and other complications and generally takes less time to heal, so keep that in mind. Vasectomies are meant to be permanent, so they usually can't be reversed. There's a way to do it, but it ain't worth the time. You should only do it if you're 100% positive. Anyway, the term vasectomy comes from the name of the tubes in the scrotum that are blocked during the procedure. That's the difference. Okay? The vasectomy works in the same process. Basically, the sperm, the microscopic cells that join up with the egg that cause pregnancy, are made in the guy's testicles, for those who know what that is. It leaves the testicles through the tubes, which are called the vas deferens, and mixed with other fluids that form what we call semen, and from there, it proceeds out of the body. By cutting those tubes, it prevents them from leaving and mixing together. Okay? That's basically it. It's super effective as far as it's, as far as I'm concerned. Now, let's go into where you can pay for and get this. Planned Parenthood centers, hospitals, private doctors, clinics, they can do this for free or at a very reasonable cost. And like I said, it can cost up to $1,000 to get it done. Okay? If you really don't want to use birth control, this is your only method, then I recommend it. But otherwise, stay as far away from this as possible. Okay? Definitely not something you want to be mixed up in, I promise you. Anyway, there are some disadvantages to this method. I feel like I should at least list that. It's designed to be permanent, so you can't change your mind later and say, oh, you know what? I don't want to do this anymore. It's too late. It's done. And like all medical procedures, there are some risks, okay? Overall, they're very safe, and for most people, they don't have any problems. But all medical procedures have some kind of risk that can cause, like infection, minor pains. Most of those can be treated with antibiotics and painkillers, but you may also run into bleeding, bruising, or swelling in said areas even after that. And again, like I mentioned before, it doesn't protect against STDs, so kudos to those who still use condoms even after this. Okay? Make sure you do that. The vasectomy may not be a good choice for you if you have a child biologically in the future. If you want a child biologically in the future, if your parents, friends, or partner is forcing you to do it, period, or you hope that it'll solve your problems. I'm not going to listen to what that means. Like sexual issues, marriage, short-term mental issues, physical illnesses, financial, what, yada, yada, yada. Can it be reversed? I know I said earlier that it's meant to be permanent and it can't be undone. In some cases, however, it can be reversed. But there's no guarantees. Your fertility may not even come back when it's reversed. Okay? It's a very complicated and expensive surgery. It may not be reversible. Whether it is or not, it's dependent on one, how long ago it's been since you've had it, the type that you got, or whether or not your body has developed antibodies to sperm when your immune system starts attacking your sperm and killing it. If you're worried about reversing when thinking about getting the vasectomy, it's better just not to do it at all. Because if you're already having second thoughts, then you just lost your chance to do it, because you're going to feel bad anyway. And chances are it's going to make you sick emotionally. So what are the risks of the vasectomy if you do choose to get it? One is a fever over 100, blood or pus coming from the cut where it was made, lots of pain and swelling in your testicle area for guys. Other possible problems include bleeding where the skin was cut through the surface, but this usually will stop on its own. Bleeding under the skin that can cause swelling and bruising. They call that a hematoma, for those who knows what that is. It usually goes away on its own, but putting an ice pack on the bruise over time and using over-the-counter drugs will help ease the pain a little bit. There's another thing called swelling. It's spermatic granuloma. I can't talk. It's caused by sperm leaking from your the tubes. It usually goes away on its own, but a doctor may need to drain it every so often. Depends on how often it does happen. Temporary pain or discomfort are common, but you can take over-the-counter stuff for that. But if it happens long-term, you need to talk to your doctor about that. So let me put it to you this way. When it comes down to the vasectomy and even the sterilization for women, these are last resorts. Okay, there are actually more risks involved with getting these two done than there is with the others. At least the worst outcome, for those who look at this as the worst outcome, is you get pregnant. And with that, the worst outcome of that is that the baby dies before it's ever born. AKA, actually, I'm not going to say that word because that's even worse than these. You know, but for those who still intend to do it, I mean, if you want to, go for it. Nowadays, the population's already thinning for certain races. I don't see a reason in trying to cut it off all of a sudden at the last possible second. But if that's what you're intending to do, I hope all these methods help you. I pray that most of y'all will choose any of the other 10 or 15 methods instead of these last two, but again, to each their own. So with that, I thank you guys for listening to this series. It's finally over. And yeah, look forward to my next episode. We're going to be talking about something totally different. Enjoy the rest of your day. Again, this is Food for Thought, Thoughts If It Were You. This is Neogentrix. If you have any suggestions, hit me up on my Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or Snapchat. Or if you want to show your support, hit me up on the anchor.fm/Neogentrix website. Till the next time we speak.